Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Africa Link this Friday, the 26th of January. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Lovely to have you on board. Coming up, the South Sudan government up in arms over the remarks made by the US envoy that President Salva Kiir is unfit for office.
Ambassador Nick Haley seems to forget that the Republic of South Sudan is a sovereign state and its leadership and the transitional government of national unity deserve respect.
We'll hear from a New York literature professor from Cameroon about the crisis facing his country.
The complexity of what is happening is related to the fact that we have a president who is fundamentally Anglophobe. I will really say that he hates Anglophones.
Also in the program, U.S. President Donald Trump tries to mend relations with African leaders at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland.
All that and much more coming up shortly, but first let's hear what's happening around the world.
I am Kai Dombach with the DW News. The German government requested a U.S. court throw out a case brought by two Namibian tribes. The Herero Anama tribes have demanded reparations for an alleged genocide at the hands of Germany in the early 20th century. A German foreign ministry spokeswoman said her country's position is based on the sovereign immunity principle. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta announced that he has created a chief administrative secretary in all ministries and created more cabinet secretaries. Monica Juma replaces Amina Mohamed as Foreign Affairs Chief Secretary, and Mohamed is now head of the Education Ministry, among the slew of changes. Czech citizens head to the polls on Friday in what is expected to be a tight presidential runoff. The final round of elections pits Euroskeptic Miloš Zeman against pro-EU candidate Jiří Drahoš. Zeman won the first round of voting with more than 38% of the vote, while Drahoš was second. Polls before voting began put the two candidates less than one percentage point apart. Voting will conclude Saturday evening. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. U.S. President Donald Trump addressed the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland on Friday. He is the first U.S. president to do so since Bill Clinton in 2000. Trump touched on fair trade and North Korea and said his America First policy does not mean America only.
As president of the United States, I will always put America first, just like the leaders of other countries should put their country first also. But America first does not mean America alone. When the United States grows, so does the world.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan threatened to expand his offensive in Syria despite protests from Western allies. Erdogan said the incursion, which is in its seventh day, would continue east, potentially confronting U.S. soldiers. Turkish forces are fighting the YPG militia along the border it shares with Syria, a force it considers an extension of a party that is outlawed in Turkey. The U.S. sees the YPG as an ally in the fight against the so-called Islamic State. A fire at a hospital early Friday morning in the South Korean city of Miryang killed at least 37 people, according to officials. The local fire chief said the fire started in the rear of the hospital's emergency room. The hospital did not have a sprinkler system. The hospital director said, under Korean law, a sprinkler system was not required for his small clinic. A partial jawbone and a set of tools found in an Israeli cave suggests modern humans may have left Africa tens of thousands of years earlier than previously thought. The bone and tools were dated at 250,000 years old. The lead author of the study, published in the journal Science, also said due to the age of the tools and bone found in Israel, modern humans must have originated in Africa at least 300,000 to 500,000 years ago. The oldest known human fossils found in Africa are believed to be about 300,000 years old. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link. My name is Eunice Wanjiru.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. We are also live on Facebook, DW Africa. So feel free to like, share, and you can also comment on the stories we are covering on today's show. Now to our top story, and South Sudan has protested against a remark by a top U.S. diplomat questioning President Salva Kiir's suitability to rule the country. Back Valentino Akol Wall, the undersecretary in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, said Ambassador Nikki Haley's remarks to the United Nations was demeaning, outrageous, and an insult to South Sudanese sovereignty.
And on Wednesday, Haley told the UN Security Council that her country was giving up on President Kiir for failing to end the violence in South Sudan, terming him an unfit partner to the U.S. From Juba, Wake Simon Wudu with the latest.
Speaking to reporters in the capital, Juba, Ambassador Wall said Haley's remarks will likely affect relations between the two countries.
Ambassador Nick Haley seems to forget that the Republic of South Sudan is a sovereign state, and its leadership and the transitional government of national unity deserve respect.
While addressing the UN Security Council on Wednesday, Haley was critical on South Sudan because of the endless conflict in the country, which has now taken 4 years. She says President Salva Kiir's government was increasingly proving itself to be an unfit partner, and she called for the UN Security Council to take more measures as efforts to end the South Sudan crisis. Haley's statement comes 2 weeks ahead of the resumption of peace talks between the government and various anti-opposition groups across the country due to take place in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. James Okuk, a lecturer of political science at the University of Juba, says the growing spat between Juba and Washington highlights growing frustration, especially among the international partners on the South Sudan conflict.
The fact that they are giving out this statement now, this means a maximum pressure they are using, pressure of words and also pressure of shuttle diplomacy, so that they ensure that when the parties, and especially Juba, which is the government, when they go to Addis to talk, they want a quick compromise without delay.
31-year-old Wani Joseph, a Juba resident, has welcomed an arms embargo sanction on South Sudan, saying it will reposition Juba in the way it is handling the political crisis.
Partly, it could be a solution to the ongoing conflict in South Sudan because at the moment, we can see the government is using a lot of the resources of the country in buying weapons instead of solving the problems that the citizens are suffering from.
Dimo Silva, another Juba resident, is skeptical on imposition of arms embargo on South Sudan as a move to solve the conflict. So that it works, he says, the international community needs to fully engage the IGAD regional countries as implementing partners.
These are the countries where most of the arms getting into South Sudan flow through. So if these countries are not willing to implement the arms embargo, and these arms enter through their countries without any interferences, nothing will happen. Arms embargo will be imposed, but still arms will be entering to their country.
That is one of the resident in South Sudan, and that report was compiled by Wake Simon Wudu in Juba. So, Eunice, what are people saying on Facebook?
Well, let me just go ahead and read these comments. Namdi Anene is saying President Kiir should open his own weapon factory to sustain his company. He's also adding and saying, yes, an arms embargo slammed on him is okay.
That's a good one. And we have this one, Ayela John Bosco says he's not only unfit, but also unable.
Fayanju Ayunkole agrees with him and says President Kiir actually looks unfit. Well, thank you for your comments and thank you for all of those who are joining us live.
Yes, indeed.
Now, here in Europe, and to be precise in Switzerland, US President Donald Trump met with Rwandan President Paul Kagame on Friday to discuss trade and security on the sidelines of the World Economic Forum in Davos. Kagame, who has recently been appointed chairman of the African Union, said he was looking forward to working with the United States while implementing reforms to make the union more effective.
Now, Trump sought to mend relations with the African leaders in the aftermath of his controversial comments about African nations. Later in the day, he delivered a keynote address to the forum. Trump talked about trade and investing in the U.S., and this is what he had to say about terrorism and immigration.
When it comes to terrorism, we will do whatever is necessary to protect our nation. We will defend our citizens and our borders. We are also securing our immigration system as a matter of both national and economic security. America is a cutting-edge economy, but our immigration system is stuck in the past. We must replace our current system of extended family chain migration with a merit-based system of admissions that selects new arrivals based on their ability to contribute to our economy, to support themselves financially, and to strengthen our country. In rebuilding America, we are also fully committed to developing our workforce. We are lifting people from dependence to independence because we know the single best anti-poverty program is a very simple and very beautiful paycheck.
That is U.S. President Donald Trump giving a speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos. And on our Facebook page, we actually asked a question earlier when he met President Kagame. What message would you like President Kagame to pass on to Trump on behalf of Africa? And we had some comments coming in. Jane, what can you see from the comments?
We have this one from Caleb Chauro in Nairobi, Kenya. He says President Trump has a lot to handle about America and Americans. It's high time African continent handles its problems alone and seriously. My humble request to President Kagame is to sit with his fellow African presidents to solve corruption, impunity, and tribalism.
Quite a long comment there. Thank you so much, Caleb Chauro. And Tega King is saying President Kagame should remind President Trump that more than anyone else, the destiny of mankind lies in his hands. It's not a mission to play pranks with.
And we have this one from Nelly Jackson. It says, I want Mr. Kagame to tell Mr. Trump and the rest of the world to visit southeastern part of Nigeria and witness firsthand the killings that is ongoing as we speak.
Those are your comments. Now, there have been continued tensions in Cameroon. English-speaking provinces have witnessed an upsurge in protest and a tough security crackdown. Patrice Nganang, a New York literature professor from Cameroon, was arrested in Douala in December last year after writing an article that criticized Paul Biya's government. He was later released and expelled from Cameroon.
DW's Fred Muvunyi had a chance to talk to him, and he first wanted to find out what is the plight of Cameroonians in the English-speaking regions.
The complexity of what is happening is related to the fact that we have a president who is fundamentally Anglophobe. I will really say that he hates Anglophones. So you can imagine what it means to live in a country where, you know, the people of the government actually are your enemies or behave as such. So when they come to the English-speaking part of Cameroon, they fundamentally always speak in French. They always speak arrogantly and they act violently. In other words, you can have the pictures, they will present you the case of killings. You can only kill people like that when you hate them, when they are really your enemies.
You're talking about a leader who treats his citizens as enemies. And as far as we know, Paul Biya has been in power for nearly four decades and there is no sign of him stepping down. Is there any hope that they can vote him out in the upcoming presidential vote?
There has never been proper elections, fair elections in Cameroon. There's never been, since 1956, Cameroon has never had elections. So you can really forget that. You can forget elections. And even if it is, even if he has 100%, so he will still be there. But those elections will not count.
As long as Biya is a president, you can't go back to your home country. How does that feel to be denied an entry to your home country?
That is actually a very interesting story because it is a chapter of something else. Thousands of Cameroonians are leaving Cameroon. But now, if you read their names, you realize most of them, I'll even say 90% of them, come from specific ethnic groups too. They are either Bamileke or they are Anglophones. They leave Cameroon in waves. And I think one day the West will have to think about it. Why is it that in Germany, most Cameroonians you meet are Bamileke? Why is it that in the United States, most Cameroonians you meet are Anglophones? They leave because one specific regime is chasing them away. And now me, myself, I happen to be a Bamileke. And I was expelled from that particular country because I came back. So thousands of Bamileke are leaving Cameroon, and the few who come back like me are expelled by that particular state.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to Africa Link. My name is Eunice Wanjiru.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we head to Nigeria for another edition of our new series, African Roots, where you will get to know about the origins of the Hausa people.
And as usual, on Fridays, we have sports. So keep listening to hear what Nigeria's Super Eagles coach, Giernot Rohr, has to say. Now, there are the most important artifacts in Africa, and they are exhibited across the world. Bronze from Benin City in Nigeria and its surrounding region. But until now, these works of art, the bronze, could not be seen within the region. They are mostly found in museums across Europe. There are now increasing demands from Nigeria that the bronze artifacts should be returned. This report by Catherine Gensler is being presented by Crispin Mokideu.
You are welcome to National Commission for Museums and Monuments, Benin City. This museum was declared open.
Ikwei Omonkwa is standing at the entrance of the National Museum in Benin City. Opened in 1973 and completely renovated since then, it is one of the most well-known museums in Nigeria. Reason being that it exhibits some of the famous bronze objects. The artifacts depict everyday scenes as well as war scenes. These bronze treasuries are what made Benin City, the capital of Edo State, and the entire region famous, dating back to a long line of tradition. Here is Omonkwa.
Broadcasting in Benin started around 1280 AD, during the time of Oba Ogola. Broadcasting was done to keep important records of cultural activities in the palace. Therefore, the usage of bronze artworks was just exclusive right of the king.
But the bronze in Benin City is just part of what used to be a bigger collection. The more widely known pieces were stolen during the colonial time and are today being displayed in various European museums, like in the British Museum in London, in Grassy Museum for Ethnology in Leipzig, and in the Welt Museum in Vienna. In total, more than 3,000 sculptures were looted during the Benin expedition of 1897. They were auctioned in museums in Europe. This is also where Theophilus Omugbai, curator of the museum in Benin City, saw the valuable bronze from his home country for the first time.
All of a sudden, I have that experience. I even took some photographs in the museum, you know, with the objects at the back. I felt this sentimental attachment to it. They couldn't read, those around couldn't read it for me, but I knew how I was feeling. I was touched. I was happy seeing them, but not happy because they were in the wrong place.
The handling of Benin City's bronze objects has been a major discussion for years between the Benin Dialogue Group, a merger between different museums in Europe, and the National Commission for Museums and Monuments in Nigeria. A special meeting to chart the way forward took place in 2016 at the University of Cambridge. Here is Theophilus Omugbai again.
I was privileged to have attended that meeting, and that meeting in Cambridge was a result of a protest by the students there, not necessarily Nigerians, but Africans there. A bronze cockerel, very, very important and used by the Queen Mother for a shrine, has been openly displayed in the hall for years now. It's an insult on our people.
The cockerel, though, is no longer at the Jesus College that belongs to the University of Cambridge, but it's also not in Nigeria. Omugbai is nevertheless happy that there are at least discussions about the remaining bronze. If it's about stolen art, the question always discussed is who does it belong to? Most of the time, there is no clear answer. In the case of the bronze, there are ongoing talks to display some of the objects in Nigeria.
That report was compiled by Catherine Gensler.
DW, African Roots.
Now, he is seen as the founding father of Nigeria's Hausa people. His name is Baya Jida, and according to the oral traditions of the region, he was an Arab prince who settled in northern Nigeria. His story has been passed down by word of mouth through the generations. Some believe that Baya Jida was a real person. Others aren't convinced. DW's Eddie Micah Jr. has more.
Hausa people are said to originally have ridden bulls. According to the legend, it was an Arab prince who centuries ago introduced them to horses after his arrival in the Hausa kingdom in the north of present-day Nigeria. This man was called Bayajida. The legend of Bayajida is central to the founding story of the Hausa state in northern Nigeria, but the legend was passed down by mouth. This makes it difficult to know when Bayajida existed, or even if he existed at all. According to the legend, he started his life as a prince in Baghdad, in what is now known as Iraq. After a fallout with his father, Bayajida led a powerful cavalry to Africa. He ended up in Daura in northern Nigeria. There, he killed a snake that was stopping people from fetching water at a local well. He was rewarded with the hand of the Queen of Daura for this brave act. But is the story based on fact? Adu Mahaman, professor of history at the University of Tahoua in Niger, has his doubts.
I think to prove this, scientists and archaeologists should go and examine the well to determine the truth about how long it has been there, especially because the area that the well is located in has two streams, which nullifies the story that there was water scarcity in the area and that water had to be looked for.
Regardless of whether the story is real or made up, the Hausa tradition has been built around it. According to the legend, at first, Bayajida and the Queen of Daura failed to have children. The queen then gave him a concubine. Both women became pregnant and bore sons. The queen's son fathered six sons. Together, this son and his grandchildren ruled what is today known as the seven legitimate Hausa states. The concubine's son gave birth to seven sons. They rule the states called the lesser or illegitimate Hausa states. With Bayajida being so central to the story of the Hausa states, it is mysterious that there doesn't seem to be any records of him among Arab travelers. Professor Adu Mahaman therefore suspects the Hausa tradition is based on a myth, an invention. Masu sarakunan
kasa Hausa. The only thing we derive from this story is that the emirs of the Hausa states wanted to give themselves a special origin, something uncommon. In doing so, they could be able to say, I'm a descendant of Bayajida.
Some say the legend was coined between the 16th and 19th centuries, while there was evidence of it in Hausa culture as far back as the 10th century. Be it as it may, Bayajida is vividly remembered today, and ceremonies of galloping horsemen play an important part in Hausa tradition today.
That report was compiled by Pinado Abdu-Waba.
And it is part of the African Roots Season, a project realized in cooperation with the Gerda Henkel Foundation.
Yes, indeed. To some sports now, and Namibia are eager to confront African Nations Championship host and title favourites Morocco as the tournament's knockout stages begin this weekend. Another match will be between Zambia and Sudan. On Sunday, Nigeria will play Angola and Congo-Brazzaville will face Libya.
And meanwhile, Nigeria will play friendly internationals against Poland, Serbia, DR Congo, England and the Czech Republic as preparation for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. The Super Eagles coach, Gernot Rohr, says he knows it will not be a walk in the park for his team, but with strong cooperation, they might just take everyone by surprise. He was talking to DW's correspondent Adegboye Ishiaka. Take a listen.
Our group is very difficult. We have wonderful teams. Argentina is vice world champion. Croatia is one of the best teams in Europe. We have opponents who are very strong, but we know that we can beat perhaps better teams like us because we are very young, and I think we can progress, be in this competition until the end.
If you want to assess Morocco, Egypt, Tunisia and Senegal, do they have their word to say in this World Cup in Russia?
Africa has five very good countries representing the continent. I think we have the quality to do something very well in World Cup. Egypt has to beat Ghana to come to the World Cup even. They did it very well, so fantastic team with the best player of Africa, Mohamed Salah. You have Senegal. It's a wonderful team also. With Sadio Mane, the big players playing in big clubs. Perhaps Nigeria does not have these very big players we had in the 90s here in this country, with Kanu, with Ikeba, with Jeje Okocha. We have young players, but I think our strength is the collective. Not one or two players who can make the difference, but all the team together, we should do very well. And it's the same for Morocco and for Tunisia. They have very good leagues, very good championships in their country, and they are able also with the European professionals to make a wonderful team. Will be very interesting World Cup for African countries.
Let us talk about your preparation concerning the World Cup. You have at least 6 dates. Can you share more light about that?
We have a good preparation. We wanted to play European teams because we didn't play at all against European teams. And we have 2 European teams in our group, which we have to beat to be better than them and to finish perhaps second. So the plan is good. We start in the country. The people can bless the players. And the federation did very good work. Now we have to do something with the Chan team also, to give the chance even to the home-based players. And we have a look on the next matches in the Chan competition in Morocco, especially Libya on Friday. And Guinea Equatorial and the last group game, and I hope will be a quarter final after. So in this program we have good friendlies, we have good training camps, we found a good base camp in southern Russia also. All will be done to be ready for the first game in Kaliningrad against Russia.
Nigeria's Super Eagles coach Gernot Rohr.
Now, Eunice, today, dear Congo President Joseph Kabila gave his first press conference since 2012. And he said he supports the delayed elections despite demands that he steps down ahead of the poll. Kabila said what other people are proposing is nothing and a leap into the unknown.
Well, we asked a question on Facebook because we want to hear what our listeners had to say to this. We asked them, what do you make of Kabila's latest statement? And one Henry Banda is quite angry. He says, this is stupidity at high level in the head of Kabila. I hope the people of DR Congo will do him justice and get rid of him. He can't be taking people for granted.
And we have this one from Romeo Adjel. He says, Kabila must be crazy. This is unbelievable coming from someone whose dad got killed by his own bodyguard before he, Kabila, succeeded him. The people should rise up.
And Prince Alfonso Alvaro says, let him step down before disturbing people with his unnecessary statement. It sometimes makes me sad to see how we blacks love power. And whenever they don't want to step down, they will talk like they are the only human beings capable of leading the country. Well, looks like people are really angry with this comment.
Yes, indeed. And I think, Eunice, sometimes I think power is so sweet because if you look at the African leaders, most of the time they'll change the constitution just to remain in power.
Definitely. It must be very sweet. And we really hope that it gets a little bit sour so that they can also see the reason to let others also come and step in.
Absolutely. And we have this one from Andreas Anderson, and he says Kabila is a Rwandese. He was a taxi driver in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania. Americans and Belgium put him in power so that they can use him easily to steal the Congo minerals.
Well, that's his comment. Thank you so much to our listeners. Thank you for all of you who are listening to us through Facebook and wherever you are. Thank you for being with us. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Thank you so much for your time.
We wish you a great weekend ahead.